And it is my pleasure to welcome you this morning to our one-hour session on the government's response to COVID-19. Today, I want us to join the national initiative to cheer on our COVID-19 heroes and thank them sincerely for the hard work they're engaging in to take charge of our nation's people. So let us start this morning with an applause to all our health workers on the front lines who are fighting against this coronavirus. I also want to offer, if persons want to take a minute to step out and understand. Yes, you know, I have no problems. We can allow persons to step out for a minute and applaud. I unfortunately can't do it because once I move the setup, it takes a few minutes to get it back in place. And I've passed. Yeah.
We'll do it for you.
Yeah,
so, you can open our windows.
Nobody
doing it here, no problem.
I'm
looking at you. Yeah,
but this has
been circulated.
Yes.
I'm hearing car horns.
Right, yes. I know in our community too, a lot of people would come out and applaud. My kids were getting cabin fever because at the start of the announcement of school closure and all that, where they were working closed and they came home. So they actually have been stuck at home for, you know, almost the full month now. So I went out and I got them a little puppy.
A little bit of
a puppy, yes. So that pup now is now finding his way around. So I have to make sure doors are closed and all that to allow for this session to be uninterrupted.
Yeah, it's actually been wonderful how many animals have been adopted. It's just been marvelous.
Right.
Yes, yes. And getting love because people are home and able to spend time with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so just want to check in again with Dexter if he is able to join us. Dexter, are you there?
Online, Kamala, if you came on.
He had come on earlier, but we were not able to get his camera on. So he said he was going to use his phone instead, but I know it takes a minute to download the app if Dexter knows how to do that.
Navigate around that.
Yes. Christy, I wanted to continue with our session now. I don't know if you might be able to get a second to call him on his cell phone.
Sure, if you send
him. Yeah, he may need some guidance in terms of downloading the app to be able to set up. I'm not sure. Right?
Okay.
Just if you can help. Thanks, honey.
Okay.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us this morning. When we started these sessions on March 19, just about 3 weeks ago, there were over 226,000 persons who were diagnosed with COVID-19. The death toll at the time was 9,285 globally. Last week, when we had part three of the session, that number had increased to 961,343. And the largest number of cases at that time was in the US with 215,000. Today, we now have, there you are, Dexter. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Are you hearing me?
Yes, we are hearing you.
Okay, great. Okay, excellent.
Wonderful, so welcome.
And I heard you think I can't download the Zoom. I heard you.
Oh, you did, okay. All right, good.
Anyway, back on point, yeah.
Yes. So just want to acknowledge that today we are dealing with a crisis where we have over 1.5 million people who have been affected with COVID-19 and close to 90,000 deaths. And because we are so close to the U.S. in terms of our business relationships and alliances, the U.S. now has 435,000 cases. So much more than the next country that's second in line. But while the global number is huge, it continues to really represent an average of persons dying to be just about 1%. So as horrific as this virus is, we can put measures in place to contain the spread, and we can defeat it. The good news is 96% of persons who are infected with COVID-19 retain only a mild version of it. However, given the level of infection and the vulnerable group who do end up being very serious, and let us also acknowledge that that has included the Prime Minister of Britain, who was in intensive care because of COVID-19. So, driven by the strategies to flatten the curve and slow down the spread of infection, government has had to impose stay-at-home curfew-type strategies. Now, this created a crisis that many companies were unprepared for, particularly in Trinidad and Tobago, where we are not familiar with the crisis management strategies of the other islands that have to cope with the ravages of hurricanes. Companies, therefore, have had to find ways to respond. Many have had to send employees home. Others were able to close their doors but remain open for business because they were able to operate remotely. This is our seventh session because we recognize with the changing environment, there are many of us who are trying to find what may be the solutions. And as we know, directors and senior managers, it's important to understand the changes in the environment if we are going to be able to provide the guidance and steer our companies in the right direction. At CCGI, therefore, we are facilitating the conversation to help in ensuring that our directors and senior managers find the strategies and with collaboration be able to come together and arrive at the types of solutions that would work. Today, our discussion will focus on employees. So before I go to the panel, I just would like to make a few housekeeping announcements. We would like everyone to remain on mute during the initial panel discussion. You will be invited to make contributions or to ask questions. There is an icon at the bottom of your screen to raise your hands when you want to get the moderator's attention. You will need to unmute yourself and then press the mute icon again as soon as you are done in order to minimize any disruptive noises. As always, because as I said, today is our seventh session, technical support for our Zoom meetings is provided by Christy Johnsela Crouch from SmartServe Limited. Many of you know Christy. Her services are outsourced to the CCGI, and we are very pleased that she provides really excellent support for our operations. So those of you who are new to this online environment and would like to get online support for Zoom meetings, you can do as we did and outsource your support to her. Please note too that this meeting is being recorded and that the recording will be sent to all our participants afterwards by Christy. She will also ensure that the recording is available on the CCGI website and available to anyone. Just want to share too that our expert moderator, who is the chairman of CCGI, Mr. Nigel Romano, is unable to make today's session and he has asked me to serve as moderator. So I'm serving that double role today. So today's panel comprises some of the leaders of our society. And I apologize that I do not have someone outside of Trinidad and Tobago on today's panel. Since we started these online discussions, I've ensured that our panel comprised the wider region. But unfortunately, our invitees for today had clashing appointments. And so because of those commitments, they were not able to join. I know we do have some regional participants online though. And that includes Shelley from the BVI. Shelley, welcome. We also have our board members from Guyana. I saw both Avia and Robbie online. So possibly we can have some sharing from our regional participation, our regional participants in the discussion later on. So just before I turn to the panel, I just want to point out that we have really never lived through a pandemic. And in fact, infections like SARS and swine flu and Ebola never really reached the shores of our region. And therefore, we accept that no one is an expert in this unprecedented situation. We are therefore in uncharted waters. However, collaboration and mutual support will go a long way to bringing out the creativity and innovation to help us move ahead of the curve and find opportunities in this crisis. So we are very thankful to our panelists who have taken the time to share of their experiences and offer support and ideas to our boards and senior managers who have to deal with very challenging people issues. So today we'll try to respond to some of those questions that plague our businesses. Do I send staff home? Do I send staff home with reduced salary? Do I tell them to take their vacation at this time? Can I continue to pay salaries if I have no revenue coming in? If I am able to implement some business continuity plans, how can I motivate staff and supervise them on a daily basis effectively? What are the repercussions to me if I have to lay off workers? Are there opportunities for us in this crisis? So quite a number of issues for us to deal with today. So our panel comprises of Lara Quantrell Thomas, founder and chairman of Regency Recruitment Services Limited, Dexter Emmerich, HR manager, consultant, motivational author, and fellow MBA lecturer, Ms. Delia Joseph, HR consultant with DHC Human Resource Agency, and Mr. Bernard Mitchell, former CEO of the National Petroleum Marketing Company Limited. So as you can see, we have some very experienced persons who would be able to share from their experience and provide some guidance for us. The structure of today's session, for those of you who are new, we begin with the panelists with opening remarks, after which we open the discussion and allow persons to be able to ask their questions or make a contribution. So Lara, if it's okay with you, I would like to ask you if you would be willing to open the baton today and share some of your thoughts for our senior managers and directors.
Okay, well, thank you very much and good morning once again to everyone. So as has already been stated, this is an incredibly uncertain and challenging time, not just for us as managers, but as human beings. And I really want to begin my thoughts on this by saying that I think one of the most important things for all of us to practice at this time is compassion. And when I say compassion, I mean in terms of your interaction with your team members, in terms of your interaction with vendors, with suppliers, with customers, because nobody really knows how this is going to turn out. Nobody really knows how long this is going to last. So we're all operating in the same sphere of uncertainty. And, you know, making demands and being irrational and unreasonable is really not going to help the situation. So the first recommendation I have for all managers of people is that you must be regularly communicating with your teams. Of course, now many of us have teams working from home. I do think it's important almost on a daily basis to communicate in a very compassionate, clear, consistent manner as the leader with your team members, letting them know what is happening with the business, constantly communicating updates, not to terrify people or overwhelm people, but in a very calm, as I said, and consistent manner to let people know what's happening. There is so much fake news, there's so much ignorance about the virus and how we're supposed to react, but your voice needs to be the voice of competence and clarity in this whole situation as it relates to your people. So regular updates, what I've been doing with my staff is every morning sending an email out to the team. Some people I call on a regular basis just to let them know what the plan is for the day, what some of the news that we've heard, some of the client interactions. So they all have a sense of where the organization is at. I think the first thing is really important is very clear, consistent, useful information to be shared with your staff. And of course, that particularly relates to what's going to happen to their jobs and their wages. So the second thing to think about is to do some forecasting for the next month. I think most of us are fairly optimistic that because Trinidad has really, I think, taken some excellent measures early enough, that this stay-at-home measure may not go into May. We may be lucky enough to just have to do it through the month of April, but of course we don't know. So I think it's very important to be able to forecast what is your business going to look like for the month of April. So in my situation, for example, I have more than 100 contractors working for various clients around the country. And so I need to be in touch with those clients to understand how their businesses are being affected and therefore what's going to happen to the jobs of my contractors. Because not only does it affect my revenue, but I am going to have some people who will lose their jobs, may have to take reduced pay and so on. So trying to forecast the next 3 weeks is really where I'm at the moment. I am not doing too much beyond that because I don't think anybody really knows what's going to happen in May, June, July. But I'm really focused on trying to get clear and useful information for the month of April as it relates to revenue and as that then relates to salaries. I'm constantly in contact with my finance team to look at where we can cut costs before we cut salaries. So my philosophy is I don't want to send anybody home for the month of April. That's really what my mindset is at the moment. So are there other things that I can do to reduce costs? So for example, one of my clients has cut all travel allowances, which obviously nobody's traveling, so it goes without saying. They've cut commissions, some of these other add-ons, so that people can still get their base salary, but they may not get some of the frills that we would normally pay out. So doing a budget for the next couple of weeks is absolutely critical, I think, to see where you can, at the very least, make sure you can pay your people for the month of April. Beyond that, as I say, I don't think many of us have really a proper understanding of what it's going to look like. I am of the philosophy that I will treat with that when I get closer to that time. I need to reassure my people now that they're okay for the month of April. Some of my clients have cut contracts, so people are working part-time. Of course, many jobs cannot be done from home. So there are some people who have lost income, certainly for the second half of April. And so we are supporting them by applying for the grants that the government has made available, and in some cases, seeing where we can top that up if possible. We're a small business, so we don't have massive reserves of cash or cash flow to be able to pay people all over the place, but it's important for us to try and give them a sense of security so that they at least know they have some money coming in for April. One of the other things that we're doing as terms of budgeting is seeing whether we can pay people weekly instead of monthly. It helps with their cash flow. It may also help with ours. So looking at your cash flow from a business point of view in terms of paying out, I think is really critical. We, like many firms, have applied for the moratoriums from the banks for mortgage payments and then been able to pass that on to some tenants that we have and other ways that we're helping all the different stakeholders in our ecosystem to get through this together. So it's not only salaries, there are other cash flow issues, money issues that people have to be thinking about. So I think it's important as an HR professional, as a team leader, to have a plan for the month of April. A budget, a communication strategy, how frequently are you communicating with your staff? And in my case, also using social media to reach out to our other stakeholders. So we have candidates, clients, job seekers. There's a lot of job seekers now who just don't know what's happening. So how do we communicate with them? Again, in a very clear, consistent and confident manner. Not optimism in a vacuous way, but something that's sort of grounded in reality. So I think it's important to have a short-term plan for me to the end of April. And then as we get closer to the end of April, we will then have to start thinking about what's going to happen in May and June. So those are just my two initial thoughts, is the communication strategy is absolutely critical. And then your budgeting and how that's going to impact your team members, doing a short-term budget cash flow is the second part of that. So my initial thoughts.
Great. Thank you so much, Lara. And I like that you start, you know, with that opening in terms of offering compassion at this time, because everyone is being affected in so many different ways. So the order in which our panel will continue, I want to ask Dexter if he will share his thoughts next, followed by Delia, and then we'll end up with Bernard wrapping up the initial thoughts from the panel. Okay, so Dexter, can we hear from you now?
Yeah. Okay, so good morning all, and I trust everyone is being safe and your families and everybody is, you know, all very much well protected. And let me also take this opportunity to give a virtual applause to the frontline workers. It's a bit late, but I mean, really have to. I think one of the things we are learning today as well, Kamla, is who are our true heroes. And I want to say that while COVID-19 is indeed disastrous, we are in a crisis situation for sure. I think there are a lot of positives that come out of it. It's changing our perspective from a spiritual and even intellectual perspective as well. And like a quote I saw yesterday, it said so nicely that the world is closed for renovations and stay tuned for a sparkling reopening. And while it is, I agree, we have got to be practical. We are, you know, in a disastrous situation. We also have to maintain that positivity. So that compassion that Lara spoke about has to be for self and of course for those around us. I think it's really a time to sit back and to really reflect and to even reinvent and disrupt how we have done things in the past. I think too many times organizations boast of certain cultures, they boast about certain core values, you know, values of humility, values of compassion. But do they really act them? You know, really, I can see them acting those values, unfortunately. At least that's my experience. And I think now is the opportunity for organizations to be authentic and to really prove the metal that they have boasted about so far in the past. You know, I also think that according to Lara, and what I like about Lara is that she's very practical. We're always told to be very strategic and long-term, but COVID-19, while we have to maintain that long-term perspective, we really have to plan by the week and even by the month. So as Lara said, she's only focusing at April. So it's not 1 year at a time, but it's not 1 year at a time, 1 month at a time to plan budgets, communication strategies, etc. The thing now regarding HR, and just two things I want to talk about a little bit, is about how do you keep your employees motivated? And also, how do you manage your remote workforce, which is now becoming part of the norm? So, of course, there will be some kind of cuts. You want to avoid cuts. Cuts should be the last thing, like Lara is doing. Her salary cut should be the last option. But it will be unavoidable in instances where some cuts have to be done. I know of a company, for example, that has cut executive and management pay by 20%. But when I spoke to one of the managers yesterday, he was still grateful because now having a job is indeed a blessing. But apart from job cuts as well, I think some other options, like you would have mentioned in the beginning, are possible. So for example, you can send persons on vacation. At a company I worked at in the past, they had people with about 3-4 months vacation backlogged. So it was an opportune time to send people on vacation. We can also do some job sharing, where jobs cannot be split between two individuals, so at least they can have a piece of the pie. You also may want to look at reduced working hours, etc. But at the end of the day, job cuts are going to be unavoidable. And you just have to ensure we do this with compassion as well, because now you may not have the opportunity, based on the whole health situation, to even meet these persons face-to-face. You may now have to communicate this online. And it calls for a certain level of tact and compassion in communicating theme. Now, regarding the employees who stay back with the organization, you have to keep them very much motivated, because now they may be working from home. They no longer have their colleagues with them, which is a very important motivating factor for employees. So some of the things we can do to motivate the employees, I think, would be, of course, that constant communication, that regular online check-in with employees to make sure they're fine. You know, maybe a daily motivational message to keep them all focused and all self-driven. Online accolades as well, because there are a lot of platforms available where you could, you know, big up your employees online, because the fact that they're still there on the job site means that even they are essential And that in itself should give them some kind of purpose to reinforce how critical their role is in the organization. You know, like when I teach leadership, Kamla, we always talk about the number one motivator being a purpose, more than even money. So they even said that a janitor in a hospital, his job is not about cleaning the rooms and cleaning the floors. His job is about saving lives. And that we're seeing now literally in front of our faces. And this is what we have to reinforce to the employees who are still employed, that they are really adding a significant value. They are very much necessary for the organization, maybe even more so than some managers as well. So that in itself is to reinforce that motivation for the employees. What I would also mention, and this really melted my heart last week, is where my former chairman reached out to me last week. I left my job about 2 months ago. And he took the time, and I know he's under a lot of pressure, to reach out to me to ask me how me and my family were doing. And I mean, that said a lot about the authenticity and the compassion of that kind of leader. So we really have to now express a lot of love and compassion and show people that we really care. And to me, this is an opportunity to really live our core values. Yeah? Just want to end to a little bit with how do we manage the remote workforce? Because I guess it's going to be very much different. Now, I have to also admit that in the past, we would have had employees working from home, but you would have some employees working from home who would play the fool. As a matter of fact, I met a friend last week. I visited him briefly, and he is working from home for the past week, and he admitted to me only today, and that was Friday, he actually did some work. So you see, even that is becoming a problem, and we have to still, we do not want to micromanage, but we still have to hold people accountable for KPIs, et cetera. So some quick tips on managing the remote workforce. You have to articulate the goals and the KPIs. Maybe you have to have daily check-ins with your employees. You may have to have perhaps a daily or weekly report completed. You may also want to ensure that you have meetings every now and again. And again, thankfully for technology, you know, all of this can be easily facilitated. There are even Google and Microsoft who are offering platforms free of charge now to facilitate this kind of online work and rapport and remote management of your workforce. So, you know, it is, again, I would say even I am scared to an extent, but I see the blessing part of this whole resurrection, if I may. And I want to use it as a catalyst to really reinvent and rebrand and really, you know, disrupt the world in a positive way. And I think together, once we align with the guidelines governed by those with the authority and those who are guiding us, that we can really get over this together as a team, you know? So yeah, that's it.
Good. Thank you so much, Dexter. I really appreciate your contribution. So a part of Dexter's talk was how do you motivate and supervise your employees who are working remotely? So Delia, I want to ask you, because I know in your experience, you provide guidance to companies who have reached that point where they now have to actually send home workers. So would you, as you do your opening, can you treat with some of those issues first, please? So I hand over to you now.
All right. Thanks, Kamla. And yeah, so thanks for this opportunity to share, because that's what we're doing, sharing. For me, the COVID-19 is a situation of just pure utter disruption. And in fact, when I started out the year, I posted an article about disruption earlier this year on how you should be treating the disruption because, you know, that's probably part of the new norm. Never would have imagined that COVID-19 would have disrupted to this extent because this has blown everything out of proportion. And of course, with the falling oil prices, we have essentially a perfect storm. So it's not just the pandemic we're treating with, we're also treating with that economic disruption of a falling oil prices. I think it's now like $20. So for me, the issue before us though is one of people. And it's amazing that it is what it is because I don't think even the oil and oil prices would have been so disruptive without COVID-19. So it is essentially a people issue. And for me, how do we treat with that? Dexter would have said that leadership is going to emerge. My words in terms of what you said, because I think it's a new skill set that has to emerge in terms of how we treat with this. So you've asked me to essentially speak on how managers ought to be looking at managing this whole situation in front of them, treating them with the business aspects of it, which is, you know, declining revenue, sharp declining revenue, sharp decline in cash flows, etc. So in my experience as an HR practitioner, and I want to say HR practitioner as opposed to an IR practitioner, because I have all duties like IR practitioners, they know the letter of the law, specific, they can tell you the cases, etc. And that's important to have at this point in time, that type of guidance. Not because you want to be an employer that you know makes decisions from a business perspective. You want to be an employer that is responsible. Responsible in terms of appreciating that your employees and yourself are going through a very difficult time. So the messaging behind how you manage this has to be one of the word that has been used this morning is one of compassion. For me personally, I'm not going to be religious if I don't say this. This is Holy Week for me as a Roman Catholic. It is about compassion. It's the compassion and passion of the King. And his walk during this week essentially says that. He took on this whole process and this whole issue of us as humans to bring us to this stage. And for me, I incorporate that everything that I do on a daily basis. When I treat with clients, when I treat with my family, when I treat with my neighbors, because I will say to you after this morning, one of my neighbors, I'm wetting plants outside, and she came outside and said, I got up with a headache, I don't know what it is. I said, what is stressing you? What are you worried about? And she says, well, I have a family, I'm worried, and I don't know what to do. I said, well, take a deep breath, let's breathe. She breathed, we talk, she laughed, and then she says, I feel better, I can go on with my plants now. And that human touch is what is required. So going into, and not to belabor everything that I said before, I want to say this though before I go into that particular question that you asked. We at DAT did develop a remote work policy that we shared on our LinkedIn page just, I think it would have been the night before. And so that gives a lot of guidance, and it's done on research that we would have completed over the last couple of weeks, benchmarking companies and looking at what is on social media, etc. It's not an easy thing, but it does offer you, if you reference that document, does offer you some guidance on how to treat with that. Some of it would have been mentioned by Lara and Dexter, but it does give you some specifics of how to do it. And you can take that and make that into your own, because again, this is a new, unprecedented time that we're living in. So in terms of how some strategies that you would want to think about in terms of treating with staff, there are things that would have gone on before us, many times before, different circumstances. One of it, Lara would have mentioned already, would have been how do you just deal with salaries on a monthly basis. This depends on the organization. Some organizations obviously will have deeper pockets than others. There are some businesses that are essentially right now totally shut down. So they have gone the way immediately of temporary layoffs. That temporary layoff, there's an approach to do that. It's not specific in the Industrial Relations Act, but it has emerged in terms of industrial relations practices over the course of the couple of years gone by. And there is a particular approach of how to do that in terms of your communication, which is very clear, in terms of what you are going to be doing, which worker is going to be impacted, because you can, in fact, roster layoff, meaning there may be some workers that you would want to keep, depending on your business, and there's some workers that you may not be able to keep. That's called rostering layoff. And you can do that. That is totally admissible in terms of industrial relations practice, good industrial relations practice. Some companies do, as mentioned before, would prefer to treat with those who have vacation piled up. They would send them on vacation now, but you would realize that quickly runs out very quickly because, again, people would have been taking their vacation as well. So that may not be too much of an option. Layoff, apparently, for the last couple of weeks, I've been having lots of conversation, is apparently the one that people are going for. There is a limit to layoff. It's a 3-month period. If you are looking to extend that period, you there is a possibility that you can, but not after a lot of communication and dialogue with your employees. And of course, if you have an RMU, you must ensure that your RMU is informed in terms of what you're doing. You would realize in some of the discussions that are happening in the public, the unions are not very vocal on an everyday basis, understanding that this situation is very fluid. They have stated the case that they would appreciate that employers are very responsible. My role is not theirs, but essentially that is what they say. So the first one out of the door that had became public in terms of layoff would have been Hilton. And I have been privy to see Hilton's letter to employees, and it's very structured. They have given them options of how they would like, how they would want to treat this, whether they're using vacation, they come to work 2 days a week, etc. So it's spread across. And so they have, they've given employees at least 4 options in terms of what they would choose. And then, of course, after that period, then they will make a further decision in terms of the 3-month period, right? As I said before, small businesses have gone that way immediately because, again, a small business, as Lara would have highlighted, your issue is revenue, your issue is cash flow. Just talking with people on the street, they think that once you have a business, this is general public, the mass, that you are essentially well endowed in terms of cash. And what I have made them to appreciate is that is so much further from the truth. Because most businesses for the last couple of years are essentially living month to month in terms of when they have paid their expenses, their commercial mortgages, their loans, your salaries, their salaries, etc. They are living month to month. That's a reality. That's going to become even more reality in the next couple of months because nobody knows how this is going to last. I listened to a forum that CNC3 had. In fact, they have very good forums, I will say. I encourage us to listen to it. And last night, a specific question that Hema posed to, I think her name is Claire St. Patrick or Fitzpatrick from BP. BP's regional, BPTT's president in Trinidad. And she specifically asked him, are you thinking of retrenchment? She says retrenchment. She was very specific to say, not at this time, but that doesn't mean to say that we're not going to be looking at efficiencies. So us as HR practitioners immediately understand when you start to talk efficiencies, you do think about where can I manage costs? And unfortunately, salaries and wages do probably factor in about at least 20% of everyone's total cost on a monthly basis. So I know I've said a lot. I want to stop there. Of course, I know this is going to go on for a little while. So if there are any questions, I'll be able to take it going forward.
Yes. Thank you very much, Delia. I appreciate that because I know that there are quite a number of businesses who might have been able to manage for the first 2 weeks. But now that we have had the stay-at-home extended to the end of the month, it's really beyond their revenue ability to continue to be able to pay employees. And they therefore would be looking for a lot of guidance in terms of how to manage. So I appreciate your sharing. I want to ask Bernard now. Bernard, I know you have a lot of very strong, your strength is in leadership because I've had you speak to us in terms of leadership strategies in the past. I want to ask, as you do your opening remarks to us, can we examine this whole issue of if the culture of the organization wasn't one where employees were happy and productive, you know, what happens now when you have to manage remotely, you know, or you have to send home workers? What are the workers' response in situations like that? So Bernard Mitchell, may I ask you to join the panel now? Right, Bernard, are you there?
Bernard, unmute your mic. Right,
are you hearing me now?
Here we go, yes. And can you put on your cameras?
Right.
Here we go, yes. Thank you so much.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for having me, Kamla. And let's see how we can address this issue. Well, first of all, I fully endorse what the other speakers, the panelists have contributed. But for me, and anything else, This is an exercise in humanity. We talk about compassion. We have to appreciate that at the end of the day, we are dealing with people. But what part of the process we are in, we have to keep first and foremost in our minds that we are dealing with people. And what people look for more than anything else is hope. So while there is a high degree of realism, we have to remain hopeful, because at the end of the day, notwithstanding we're not sure how long this process is going to take, there is recovery that's going to come. Right? So we have to keep in mind that that is the little icing on the cake that people are looking for. Don't tell me that I'm not sure how long it's going to last. Tell me also that at the end of it, how are we going to come out of this? Right? Yes, the survival of the organization is first and foremost, but if we have a situation where we come out of this process and no one jobs, no one can create demand and so on, we are left basically in a depression. So you want to make sure, first of all, that people are in a position to recover in a connected way so that we all go together as one. Because as they've been saying, we are all in together. In terms of the whole issue of leadership, I think this is a case where, as they say, the chickens are coming home to roost. Your leadership balance sheet in that organization is going to inform the level of trust that you will have with employees, right? The extent to which they would buy into what you're saying. And as they say, credibility is a key asset in a time of crisis management. And I tell you, this is crisis management on steroids.
Yeah.
People just don't know. And while you have all sorts of framework and systems and policies for crisis management, this is really the unknown. So if you're a leader and your employees have a particular regard for you, if the culture of the organization is one where there is support and caring for others and so on, then you're well on your way in terms of how you're dealing with remote working, how you're dealing with a situation where you have to engage union and employees in terms of what the future holds. But if you're in a situation where there is a dynamic within the organization where there is little trust, right? Leaders don't practice any degree of emotional intelligence. Employees see leaders are being self-absorbed and so on. Then it's a harder path that you would have to follow. Because if you are managing employees who are working remotely, the question is, if you start to implement systems and arrangement where feel that they are disenfranchised, it makes it even more harder. So you might have a situation where you have 10 employees, but where remote work is concerned, I could only facilitate 3 or 4. Are you friends? Is, you know, one of the isms going to come into force? Be it favoritism, cronyism, nepotism, right? Those are things that we have to be concerned about when we start implementing arrangements or systems where are going to have less than they had before, right? If we are that we're going to a system where we're going to retrench or separate staff, yes, the union is involved, but at the end of the day, the management has a final say on that. What criteria are you going to use to determine who stays on board and who is separated? And the question becomes, are people going to see that as being fair? Are they going to feel that they're being discriminated, right? And to the extent that you've had a good relationship, a culture that recognizes, you know, the key attributes we talk about, our core values, right? Mutual respect, professionalism, teamwork, and so on. It makes it that much easier if you have been living those values within the organization. Because without those things, a lot of the initiatives that you would have to put in force today would be undermined if you have not been living those things. Bear in mind also that the employee themselves have a key part to play in this, right? If you're an employee who has bad attitude, high absenteeism, and so on, they put themselves in a bad position when it comes to some of these initiatives, right? Because what employers will be looking for is those employees who are most productive, who have the right attitude, who are more flexible in terms of arrangements and so on. Because if you have a situation where it's an employee that is highly unionized, and you have a situation where strong union emphasis within the organization, you're in a situation where employees feel that they don't have to abide by certain things, right? But this is not a situation where you could facilitate that type of thing. But I say to you that notwithstanding those things, this is also an opportunity to rise to the occasion. It's an opportunity for leaders to grow. It's an opportunity for leaders to inspire trust, right, by do things. Because, yes, we have one crisis, but if you have poor leadership, you create a secondary crisis, right? And the question is, how do you ensure that that secondary crisis is not created, right? Some of the initiatives have been outlined, but more than anything else, fundamentally, how you deal with the people in the organization is critical. I would have seen some of the initiatives put forward by my fellow panelists. The issue of extended sick leave, people taking their vacation. But I want to say that to the extent that the organization has the wherewithal, we try to facilitate employees to the point where if even we have to give them a stipend so that they continue living lives as people, because that is the fundamental issue. When people are sent home, whether it's a furloughed, you know, separated indefinitely and so on, they have to live. Mm-hmm. Need some sort of income to facilitate that. So even if we get to the point where we reduce pay, we have a paid vacation leave being taken and so on, to the extent that this continues over a period of time, consider the whole issue of paying employees a stipend so that they can keep body and soul together. They will be eternally grateful. I think this is also part of your strategy for employee retention going forward. So like I said, as Kobe said in one of his pieces, begin with the end in mind, because there is going to be an end. And we want to make sure that at the end of this recovery, we all come out with a perspective where we could feel proud of ourselves in terms of how we behaved, both as leaders and employees, through this dilemma. Yeah, let me end there and see what questions there are.
Thank you very much, Bernard. That was an excellent contribution. I really appreciate that, especially, you know, as you ended with saying, yes, it's difficult to know when this is going to end, but if we come out with the vision of, you know, how can we feel proud of ourselves at the end of this, it would guide the decision-making process when you have to make those very hard choices. Another thing you said, which Lara also touched on very early on, which is when you are in that position where employees must go home. You spoke about supporting employees so that at least they have some minimum income that allows them to live. So Lara mentioned where there were employees who were in fact sent home, they are seeking to help those employees access the grant reliefs that's offered by government. So can I ask if any of the panelists have experience with that, and we have persons who are listening in and want to be able to help their employees in that way, what exactly do they need to do? So Lara or Delia, either of you, can you take that particular question?
Okay, well, I'll start and then Delia can, sorry, Delia. Okay, I think I unmuted faster than you. I think that's the only difference. So we are, again, this is all new and navigating some of these online applications and what's required. There are a number of different grants available, as I'm sure you're all aware, salary relief, rent relief, and so on. So what we're currently doing is we're compiling a sort of a synopsis of what's available and the processes that are required for each one. The most important one that we're looking at is the salary relief grant, which is available to people who've either lost their income completely or partially. And we're getting ready to basically be able to implement that coming down later in the month. The forms are on the NIB website. The challenge is, as with many things with the government, you can fill in the form online, but you still have to print it, sign it, take it to a government office, NIB office. I know police stations have hard copies of the forms available, but again, it means getting in your car and going to the police station, all of which we're not supposed to be doing. So I'm not that confident, honestly, that the processing of these claims is A, going to be very efficient. I think they're going to be inundated with claims. And then how do you get the forms in? You can email them, but they're not accepting electronic signatures. I'm not quite sure how that's going to be reconciled. And then secondly, once you've submitted your claim, how quickly do you get the money in your account? Understandably, the government has to validate, because there'll be a lot of fraudulent claims. So they do have to be able to validate, which is why the employer is also required to submit part of the application. So we're going to just have to work through it and hope that the government has put the necessary infrastructure in place to very quickly both accept, process, approve, and then remit money, hopefully electronically, into people's bank accounts. We don't want people lining up at the ministry to get their checks. All of that obviously is not what we're looking for. So I'm learning this as we go along as well, but so far we're at the point of filling in the forms, and then next step, of course, is applications. Delia?
Yeah, so I was actually going to say the same thing, Lara. So you've articulated very clearly, because, and again, it's a very fluid situation, because we're seeing the government themselves best intentions, but they're seeing some changes as they go along. So into specific to the form, I would say I have the same concerns you have. Perhaps the employer can help, because not everybody will be blessed to have a printer in their homes to download the form, et cetera, et cetera. So perhaps the employers, with their impacted employees, can do that for them. Download the form, make sure it filled out properly, stamp it, etc. So when it's a ready, set, go, they can go to it. But yeah, I have the same concerns. And I don't want us to sound pessimistic, but I know the government is also probably putting things in place to treat it for, and that's probably their biggest challenge. How do they treat with that? And how do they quickly process so that people can actually get this sum of money to relieve themselves? But I do have the same concerns with Lara. As an employer, perhaps you may want to download the forms to the employees, understanding that they may not have the equipment at home, get and help them to fill it out, get them stamped, etc. So when the process starts, they are ready, set, boom.
Yeah, and there's, of course, the very practical challenge that if, let's say, you have 20 or 30 employees and your business has had to close, so yeah, you don't have any revenue coming in and you have to process forms for that number of people, being able to get all of those people to come out to you, because they now need to also sign those forms to complete the process before the application is made. So,
yeah. And one thing I just wanted to add, which is not very apparent, but we have learned, is that if you are in a household that collectively earns $10,000 a month or more, even if you've lost your job, you cannot apply. So, yeah, so you may have two or three other people in your home that are still employed, but you are not. If the collective income in that household is $10,000 a month or more, you're not eligible to apply. Now, interestingly, it doesn't ask for that information on the form. So I'm not quite sure how they're going to validate. Are they going to go house to house to check people's payslips? I don't know how that's going to be done.
Yeah. And again, okay, that is the practical side of it. The other thing that I have a concern about is the pandemic. I mean, that was actually announced when this actually started. I think it was probably a week after. But so far, nothing else has come out of that. It was a discussion. But the provisions, etc., for the leave has not been forthcoming. And so I'm wondering what's happening or not. I've been trying to network and see, but I haven't seen anything. So I don't know if any other panelists would have seen anything. So those are some of the questions I'm getting. What about the status of it, etc.?
So my understanding of that so far is, unless the pandemic leave is captured in some sort of legislation, it cannot apply to the private sector. However, it can be government's policy decision, and so the government ministries may be able to apply it in some way to public servants. But again, that needs to be clarified.
Yeah, some of my clients are government in public servants. So I'm saying it's supposed to be provided in a legislation. They said that it was going to happen. So even then, cannot actually process the whatever it is that was aligned for the pandemic. So they are still going to wait and see.
Yes. All right. So I just want to remind participants, if anyone has a question or comment, you can either raise your hand. But I want to ask Shelley Bend, who is with us from the BVI, if Shelley is still online, if she can share with us for 2 or 3 minutes in terms of what is happening with respect to employees and, you know, the BVI has been a little bit more prepared than us, I think, to deal with the fact that at times you may have to close your entire business unexpectedly and deal with other crisis situations. So Shelley, I want to ask you to, if you can share with us for a few minutes and to remind participants that they can in fact raise their hands or type a comment or question for us. Shelley, are you there? Let me just check if Shelley is still with us because she had joined us. Yes. Shelley, you will need to unmute your mic. And if it's possible for us to get you on the video as well, would be wonderful. If you were hearing us, I know that she's online. Cool. In the interim, let me just ask to reiterate this issue in terms of the 3-month period that employers may have. Is it that you can say to your employees, well, given that we are in uncertain times and we don't know when we may be able to come back out to work, this is an option I'm taking. And what is the process that an employer will need to follow in order to comply with the requirements for them to legitimately be able to engage in this act? Can you share on that, Delia?
Well, so it would be different for different employers. So if you have an RMU, you obviously have to give your RMU some notice that this is what is going to happen in terms of the layoffs. You must do that, because they will have their respective bargaining units within your company. So you have to give them notice. So a layoff, a temporary layoff, does not require a notice period as if you're doing retrenchment. Retrenchment requires notice and so on. So a layoff is to say, this is where we are as a business. It's a very simple process. It is with deep regret. Of course, you have to exercise words inside of there. You have to exercise where you are as a business, your understanding, this is difficult, etc. The period, of course, the period in which when it starts, your temporary layoff, and when it is going to end, and before the end, what the process is going to look like. So if you're in a better position, this is what's going to happen. If you're not, then we need to take some further action. So basically, the communication in terms of the letter needs to be very specific, time period, what is required, and so on. But as I said, it's not referenced in the Industrial Relations Act itself. It has merged in terms of overtime and in terms of the practice of industrial relations. In fact, I think in 1986, there was a case between, between a specific union, and I think it was an air conditioning company. I can't remember. I can always send that information. Where they said that the 3 months is essentially what is allowed. If you need to extend it, you possibly can. It's not recommended, but it has to be done after discussions with the employees, your respective employees, and of course, if you have a union, with your union.
Mm-hmm. Yeah? Okay. Yes, now, and there was another point that was raised in terms of, so employees who can work, you know, do we have to have new policies that must be written on the company's part with respect to remote work, right? And I know that we were, Delia, you shared that there's a guideline that your company offered. I think we have Shelley online now. Shelley, I'm hearing you a little bit. Are you able to speak for us to hear?
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we're hearing you, Shelley. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Good morning to everyone. Sorry, our IT security is blocking my video, so you won't be able to see me. And I wore my branded shirt just for this occasion. Thank you. Thank you for having me on. Yes, in the BVI, we are a pretty small country, but we are very global in terms of our reach, in terms of the work that we do. We provide services to clients that are all over the world, largely from Asia. So when this pandemic started to take effect in China, Hong Kong, we felt it almost immediately in terms of, the flow of jobs coming through, the work requests. Just to give you a bit of a background, sorry, I'm Shelley Benn, and I'm a director and general counsel of Trident Trust Company in the BVI. And we provide trust services and corporate services to a global clientele. A lot of our work comes in via email, so we get work requests via email. We process it here. We liaise with government ministries to get documents. We also have to work with the corporate registry here, as well as the Financial Services Commission to process work. A lot of that work is, to generate documents, certify documents, and provide, corporate services generally. So, and also just to say, by way of background, obviously the BVI was one of the countries that was very badly affected by Hurricane Irma in 2017. And so we have had to, in the past 2 years, I would say, rethink the way we do things here. And I dare say many companies have had to revise their BCP, their business continuity plans, in the wake of Irma, simply because Irma redefined catastrophes for us. It redefined any idea about business continuity that we had previously. And so we had to put certain things in place, primarily the idea of remote working and having that capability was a priority. And that has now paid in, come back to us in dividends because we have been able to invoke our BCP and I'm speaking for my company, we've been able to mobilize about 90% of our workforce so that they can work remotely from home in a secure environment with secure login. Again, our industry is one where information security is critical. Maintaining the security of data is critical. And so we implemented a number of IT security measures that would allow us to work remotely securely. While perhaps 3 months ago, our idea of remote working was largely limited to those in a management or senior management position, what we realized is that, or what we did, thankfully, is that we also, when we were looking at our IT security measures and remote working measures, we tried to make it scalable. And so within a few days of recognizing that we were going to be shut down or we were going to have a quarantine, because in the BVI, we have three confirmed cases of COVID, but we were very quick. The government here was very quick to shut things down and to implement curfew measures. It was, at first it was a sort of soft curfew from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. the next day. But with very short notice, the government changed that to an entire 24-hour shutdown. In the first instance, it was a week, and now we're into our second of 3 weeks that this shutdown has been going on. And so because of the short lead time, we needed to scale up our response to allow for remote working, and we were able to do that. So I think one of the things that I would encourage businesses to do, because obviously this time we hear all of the, we hear a lot of horror stories about what's going on for employees, and obviously for employees, being laid off at this time is possibly the worst thing that could happen, other than, losing a loved one or something like that. And so one of the things that I would say has been really important and has been really effective for us is communication, having a clear plan, communicating that plan to your staff, allaying fears about, you know, the future. Obviously, we don't know how long this is going to persist, but letting them know that your leadership is thinking about this, meeting daily, looking at all of the angles, trying to do what, you know, my colleague was saying, you know, in terms of budgeting, forecasting, making a plan, communicating that plan, having a clear incident management structure so we know at this stage, this is what we're going to do. We're going to prepare our first level. The second level is where there are only a few cases, this is what we're going to do. You know, a few people are going to go home and test, you know, the remote working and grab. We're going to make sure that everybody can work remotely. And then, you know, stage three is when there's a shutdown. What are we going to do then? And communicating each step of the plan, you know, to your colleagues, so that your staff, so that they understand what's coming next. Mm-hmm. One of the things that our management team did was, you know, we met every day and talked about what we were seeing going on in the rest of the region and in the rest of the world, so that we could get an idea of what's coming next. When we, before we were locked down, we looked at other countries in the region that were, you know, going into quarantine and curfew measures. We looked at what's happening in the US and the UK. And we said, well, this is not happening to us now. We have no confirmed cases. But you know what? The minute we get a confirmed case, the government is likely to take this step and the next step and the next step. What are we going to do in those cases and in those instances? And so we tried to look at trends and analyze trends and plan for what was likely to happen so that we were never caught unawares. Another thing that we try to do is to, as I said, we try to create some flexibility for our staff, especially in the remote working environment. We let them know, look, you know, the internet may be internet traffic may be very heavy during the normal working hours. So what you can do if you're an early bird, wake up 3 o'clock in the morning, access the internet. If that is what works for you, then that's fine. You know, I think another one of the panel was talking about, you know, giving people KPIs and letting them know what's expected of them. And that's what we try to do as well. You know, we don't necessarily need you to sit slavishly in front of your computer from 8:30 to 5, but this is what we expect, a certain amount of output. So I think being flexible, being compassionate, communication, using all the different lines of communication. We have Teams talks, we have WhatsApp groups, you know, we send out weekly communications to our staff, telling them what's going on around the region and what's going on across our group and what's going on in the office. A few of us have been able to have passes so we can come out and support the office, you know, the remote workers in the office. So that constant communication. It's probably too late to do this at this moment, but learn from this. This is a learning opportunity. I think we took the opportunity of Hurricane Irma to learn from that, and we invested in our IT infrastructure, we invested in our office, and I think that has allowed us to respond with alacrity and with sensitivity and with a certain amount of maturity as well in this pandemic. And so, you know, business leaders, managers, directors need to learn from this as much as they can and plan the next thing that happens. We didn't expect something like this after Irma. We thought, okay, we got through Irma. We have another 10 years before we have to deal with anything else. And now, you know, 2 years later, we're dealing with this. So we have to take every opportunity to learn, to grow, to develop, and to plan. And always remembering that the staff, your staff, are at the heart of your organization. So we have to continue to affirm them and make them understand that everything that we're doing, they're at the heart of. And continue with that empathy, that understanding where they're coming from and the fact that they have all of these concerns, their families, the security of their loved ones. Loved ones may be stranded elsewhere, so they may be alone and wondering about that, checking in with your staff, and constant communication and letting them know what the plan is. Even if it's only a week plan, plan for a week rather than a plan for a month or the year, communication. on that sense. So I think that's all I have to say, and that's my contribution for now.
Thank you very much, Shelley. I really appreciate you sharing with us. And you raised a very important point that we have recognized as a challenge for businesses now. And that is, for so many people going online and working remotely, there are now security issues related to that online environment. So in fact, next week, Wednesday, we are going to be looking at risk management and cybersecurity issues. And I want to invite everyone to join us for that. It's now 10 past 11, so we are over the time allocated for this online session. I haven't seen any questions from our participants, so I would like to ask our panel if we can have some closing comments from each of them. So, I'd like to start in the same order. So can we go to you first, Lara, and let's hear your closing comment and advice to those persons who are online listening to us.
Thank you very much. So just in wrapping up, I want to say to everyone that don't be afraid to communicate regularly, frequently, with compassion. But don't, you are going to make mistakes. We all are making mistakes because this is new for all of us. But if you have an honest and open relationship with your team members, I do think that they will understand and you can get through this together. So I would suggest that you really just be open with your staff about what's happening and how people are feeling as much as you can. But to really be that strong, focused leader is at this time is what people need. We need it as a country, we need it as a world, and we certainly need it as organizations. So be the one that your staff look to for guidance and for support. And best of luck to everyone.
Yes, thank you very much, Lara. Dexter?
Hi, so again, you know, I think it's really a wonderful time, again, wonderful in quotation marks, for us to really reflect and see how it is we can move forward. I mean, according to Shelley, if you kind of reflect on Irma, it was indeed a disaster, but again, it prepared them to be even more proactive compared to other countries in managing COVID-19. So I want to reiterate that crisis can be catastrophic, but it can also be, it can also accelerate learning and help us to again to let the normal become a new normal, because we all know that going forward, that normal is going to change. It's a time for leaders again to engage, you know, as Lara and even Bernard would have said, about being more compassionate and about bringing the human side towards their employees while also trying to save the organization. So employees also need to understand that the cost factor must be borne by not just the employer, but also the employee and even by governments and everyone concerned. It can't be just the employer, you know, being the only victim, unfortunately. So we need a lot of togetherness now. We need a lot of camaraderie. We need a lot of sacrifices. It's a time, too, for organizations to look at who really are their loyal and top employees. And even in terms of separating and reducing the workforce, Kamla, you know, while it is, I also want to have a heart, I also like to be practical. It's a time as well to even when downsizing, apart from the lifeboat, to also look at those employees who have not been adding value, those who have been politicians in the organization, because I have worked with some, so I know what I'm talking about. So it's also an opportunity for us to start ridding the organization, like how Mother Nature is seemingly cleansing. Organizations can also be cleansing themselves as well. It calls for a different type of leadership in terms of now motivating differently, in terms of managing the remote workforce. But again, thank God for technology. You know, we can do that efficiently. So I want to wish everyone the very best. And like the other panel speakers would have mentioned, I am sure that together as a team, we can be stronger than this adversity. And at the right time, all will be well. God bless us all. Thank you, Kamla.
Yes. Thank you very much, Dexter. I really appreciate that. So Didier, may we have your closing remarks now?
Yes, I'm just going to be very short and sweet, which is to say that for me, COVID-19 is a people issue, and it's going to end as a people issue. From the perspective of is that in this period of time, what we choose to do as a people is going to help at the end of it. So whether you use the time to reset and recalibrate, even within yourself, which is where I am hoping that we all go because it's going to be different for each one of us in terms of the experience. So while it's a health issue, your experience as you go through this is going to be different because each of our circumstances will be different. It is a time for, yes, leadership. It is a time more for me, from the perspective of compassion, understanding, sharing, and generosity, which is one of the reasons why we have, in terms of our organization, as small as we are, which is all of 3 people, is to do some research and to say, here is the knowledge. Can you use it? Use it. Rather than saying, you know, here is something I have, pay for it. With whatever way you can help. Because as I said, it's the collective effort I think is going to help us to survive this and to come out at the end as a people better collectively. Government, organizations, families, churches, wherever you are, that is to me is what is going to make a difference. So best of luck, everybody. Take care of yourselves. Take care of your health in terms of your mental health in particular. And take care of your families, particularly those of us who are fortunate enough still to have our parents around. My mother is very good. My father is behaving like a child. He wants to go out every day. I have to be almost like a big stick with him. Have patience with them because they too are experiencing something they never thought they would. So best of luck, everybody.
Yes. Thank you very much, Delia. And you're just so absolutely right. You know, COVID-19 is a people issue. And it's going to really be, you know, how we end as a people that it's going to show how much we have grown. So can I ask Bernard now if we can get your closing comments?
Sure. In the beginning, this is an issue of humanity. But even in crisis, there are opportunities. And there are opportunities for business, leadership. And we keep making reference to the whole issue of, you know, working remotely. I just want to make the point that this is an exercise that we can't treat in a sort of subliminal way, because if you're talking about working remotely, you're talking about an ICT policy. You're talking also about having the ICT infrastructure in place. You're also talking about having systems of working. And equally important are the people equipped with the skills, right, to work remotely, right? So it's not just something that we put out there and say it's going to happen overnight. Let's learn from the experience, right? And based on this, you know, at what time we said that the desk phone is dead, now the desk and the desk phone is dead, right? So that's the opportunity that I see in this particular debacle. So let me take the opportunity to wish everyone well and also a happy and holy Easter. Stay safe, everybody.
Yes. Thank you very much, Bernard. I just want to share, there was a comment from Deborah Hadaway, I think it was. So yes, Deborah was saying to everyone, she really wanted to appreciate the leadership of her organization. Since March 6th, they had begun rostering as many as 80% of their staff. So that really helped ensure that persons, you know, continue to have some measure of a regular work. Shelley, thank you so much too for that contribution and your comment. As you have written to us, constant communication is key. In the BVI, you held town hall meetings with staff while you were still in office. So I guess that is, and as you say, having company WhatsApp groups as well and team channels so that that could support the communication, because at the end of the day, we want to be able to ensure that we offer whatever kind of comfort that we can to our employees. I know we will continue to have all measure of challenges as we move forward, but I really appreciate that there were some beautiful nuggets coming out of today's discussion. As hard as some of the choices are going to be for us going forward, how are we going to emerge out of this at the end? Are we going to be proud of the individuals who we are? Have we made the choices that we would want to be able to share? When we talk about COVID-19 as a historic event and the lessons go down for generations, what would we be saying to our families? What would our children be saying about us? And what would our employees be saying about how we dealt with this crisis? Let's leave that as some deep thought for all of us going forward. I want to thank everyone for taking the time for joining us today. I apologize that we went over time, but it's really an important discussion. So next week, I invite you to cybersecurity issues, and we will continue the discussion on Thursday, looking at people, the impact on people, and possibly try to also bring in someone from the health sector, if that's possible. Thank you all very much from the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute. Have a safe day. Continue to look after your families, and we will see you guys again next week. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, have a good one.
Bye.